You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 16th of August, 2023, and I am your host, again solo, Matthew Raphael Johnson. We all wait for the day when Sven Longshanks will be back with us. Today I'm going to talk about a slightly lighter topic, at least I think it is, and it's something that I've been talking about on my Patreon page for a long time. Now, normally, a big area for me has been the failures of the American military. And I have so much material on my Patreon page about how the U.S. is, the military is literally, not just metaphorically, falling apart. And recently, of course, I've upgraded that to talking about how that's relevant to the war in Ukraine. Keep in mind, too, that my Patreon page and the Daily Nationalist are linked in the sense that what I talk about on here, I have in far greater detail on my Patreon page, and the link there is available in the description and many other places. Of course, you can give me, you subscribe to that. You can enter any amount you want to subscribe, but I personally recommend that you enter a large amount of money. So I'm using, in constructing this, a few articles, some going back 2017, from Russia Today, or RT. And the first one is very recent, and I guess this is the way a politician may speak, although he's not really a politician. Russian Defense Minister General Sergei Shoigu talked about the end of American military dominance, or actually he says Western military dominance, but that's one of the same thing. Of course, I've been saying this practically since I could walk, but he says that Asian, African, Latin American governments, I think he probably means Asian and Latin American, see their roles in the world expand. Most people don't even consider that other countries have a Marine Corps or an Air Force. But that Russia's victory, obvious victory in Ukraine, is a strong mark. It's a boundary that you can use to show precisely when American military dominance came to an end. Now, of course, I tended to think that was the case in Somalia, or at the very latest, Afghanistan. But, and he was making these comments at the 21st International Security Conference in Moscow, bringing together the military-industrial complexes from various countries. Now, he makes another point that I've made 1,000 times, that the Russian military and the military of Novorossiya, of course, is fighting not just the armed forces of Ukraine, such as they are, but the entire West, that they call the collective West, meaning the liberal oligarchy that runs countries of Western Europe and North America. So, and he's saying that, you know, there's countries around the world that are approaching Russia for the first time to build pieces of military equipment. I mean, that's the very nature of the Russo-Chinese alliance. But his point was that Russia's dispelled the myths about the superiority of Western military standards. And I think he knows this, but I've been researching for ages that it's far worse than it appears on the surface. Kiev has been given a laughable amount of equipment that they don't know how to use. So at least half of it is the nature of the administration in Kiev. And these untrained men, on the other hand, it's the equipment themselves. Using NATO tactics, however, you know, in abbreviated form, these can't ensure any kind of superiority on the battlefield. Total lack of qualified manpower in Ukraine, of course, have added made these problems even worse. But he also stated, and this was a far bigger point, that NATO is really using this to test out various military strategies and pieces of equipment. And, you know, the colonial administrator, Zelensky, simply supplies the manpower. Then he makes the obvious point that the massive losses, both civilian and military, in Ukraine are completely irrelevant to Ukraine's backers. And that might be the understatement of the decade. Now, we all know that there was never any counteroffensive. Not that these journalists know what a counteroffensive is. And keep in mind that they are embedded with the U.S., wherever they report. I don't know. A lot of them don't enter the country at all. But just in June, Ukraine lost 43,000 men and 5,000 pieces of heavy equipment. The tanks and armored combat vehicles beneath tanks have performed disastrously. Now, of course, the defense industry in the West, which, unlike Russia, is privately owned, has seen profits go through the roof. And he suggests this may be part of the cause, but it certainly can't be the entire cause. This is a way to, you know, essentially it's a war game to the West using actual lives. But even controlling for Ukrainian incompetence and lack of training and lack of motivation, and the fact that these are actually men grabbed off the street and sent to the front, even controlling for that, the equipment that's been delivered to Ukraine has not performed as they were supposed to. Russian arms have done the exact opposite, and Wagner had a big part in that, because they're taking cities while not having the superior number of men. Usually you have to have four times the amount of offensive soldiers than defensive soldiers. That's been reversed in eastern Ukraine, proving not just the mettle of the soldiers themselves, because Wagner is just mostly ex-Russian military anyway, in Belarus, in Central Asia, but the nature of the equipment too. And there's some new innovations that are actually being used on the battlefield right now that the media, of course, doesn't understand enough to report whatsoever. And he said, I'm quoting him here, he said, in real conditions, our weapons show the reliability and effectiveness. But at the same time, the widely advertised Western equipment turned out to be far from flawless in reality. And of course, the captured weapons from the front were brought to that expo, that forum. And guests, those who were knowledgeable about this kind of thing, were able to inspect them and see how bad they really are. Especially the tanks and what pass for tanks that have been sent recently. I get the impression that, and I'll talk about this in detail in a minute, I get the impression that the NATO countries are sending old, sometimes semi-operational equipment that they're trying to get rid of anyway here. Old Soviet equipment, things that they're phasing out, and this is a good excuse to simply get rid of them. Of course, since June, there's been no progress from the Ukrainian side. They're suffering heavy casualties for no reason, and their own state-owned, in terms of the Russian military-industrial complex, has adapted to the conditions of this particular sort of warfare, as well as sanctions, although, frankly, sanctions have been nothing but a boon to the Russian economy, making it the most independent economy in the world. And given that fact, of course, you have countries, including India, coming to this forum wanting to work on military equipment together. And this is what happens. Sanctions on Russia have simply meant that they have to forge ties elsewhere, ties that they may not have forged in the past. And that really is the purpose of this forum anyway. One example here, the Swedish-made CV-90. It's an armored vehicle. It's not a tank, although no doubt reporters call it one. Even though it's from Sweden, it's actually made by BAE, which is a British company. And the defense ministry is going over one of these. It's extremely light. And the commander, who was there at the time, Andrei Morvichev, who, by the way, the media had said was killed actually more than once, was showing this vehicle. This vehicle had been in use, or that type of vehicle had been in use since the early 90s. It resembles a tank, but it isn't. And it was knocked out with an RPG-7. In other words, someone shot a grenade at it. A grenade launcher that's been in use since the 50s. That's all it took to knock this thing out. Now, obviously, it's not a tank, but anything armored should be able to withstand that. And, of course, they were making fun of it. You know, this vehicle was stopped with the tool of our grandfathers, as he said. But something else was confirmed by this particular Swedish trophy, that there were no spare parts. There was very little ammunition and very few supplies, which, of course, I've been talking about for a very long time. The CV-90 is very tall. It's an easy target. It has a low rate of fire because it had to be reloaded largely by hand. And it had what passes for the people who know military hardware are aware of the Bofors 4070 autocannon, which initially was an anti-aircraft weapon. This is actually the proper use of the word gun, made in Britain, using 40mm cartridges, which is a hand-loaded magazine that has different compartments for different types of ammunition. But its total capacity is 24 rounds. It had very little by way of ammunition on board. So much armor has been captured and exposed as simply substandard. And unfortunately, the crew was killed in the process. But now this you're starting to see this elsewhere. Scandal in the Baltics, where the Lithuanian government said they're not going to be buying the Abrams tank, which, by the way, runs on jet fuel, which few of these places can spare. And certainly they don't have it at all in Ukraine. Rather, they went to the German Leopard 2, Leopard Mark 2, because NATO has essentially ordered them to build their little military up. Now, the Leopard is standardized. I mean, these are all NATO productions, so they have to be standardized to work with each other. But I think going to Germany was a huge mistake. Not that the M1 is so great. Now, the defense minister in Lithuania, Arvydas Anušauskas, who, by the way, is a screenwriter with zero military experience. So many of the defense ministers in these places are simply politicians, or even worse. But the dummy said this on a Facebook post. He said the Defense Resources Council selected the Leopard after taking into account, quote, detailed market analysis and military assessment. He's talking about price, maintenance costs, operational environment, mobility, safety, adaptability, firepower, etc. And the M1 has come up short. They may buy 54 of these, which I'll talk about in a minute, may be an error. Of course, they don't really have money for this, but they're being ordered to do it solely to surround Russia. But he said this on a Facebook post. And here's what the president, Neustadt, said. We agreed in the State Defense Council that things that are of restricted use should be restricted and should not be shared on Facebook right after the meeting. I understand that it may seem to some to be a very important part of the job to share the freshest information on Facebook, but it really should not be the primary function of a minister or any other public official, especially since you always have to think about the secondary consequences of making such information public. Well, maybe if they hired someone who wasn't a screenwriter as defense minister, maybe you would have more intelligent decisions. Now, Germany is in no position to deliver these to Lithuania anyway. Neither is the U.S., for that matter. The amount of aid sent to Ukraine is so great and so absurd that the countries involved don't have much left anymore. And because Lithuania has turned away from the Abrams and went to the Germans, it suggests to me that there's a rift between Lithuania and the U.S. I was in college when Lithuania became independent, and it was an American, I think it was a colonel, who went over there and built the Lithuanian military from the ground up. That was in the New York Times. Now, in the Czech Republic, they're doing the same thing. They've rejected the American tank and went to the Leopard 2. And as I said before, Czechia donated the Soviet T-72 tanks to Ukraine last year, meaning they're just getting rid of them anyway. So they've ordered 18 Leopards, and maybe more than that. Now, most of the Leopards that are in use, because they have very inexperienced crews and aren't what they're supposed to be, almost all of them have been knocked out right away. 15 in a single day, in fact. Although I spend a lot of time talking about the absurdity of the American military, it escaped me, and this is back in 2018, how bad off the German military is, of all people. In 2017, their industrial complex, which is Europe-wide, sent 97 pieces of heavy military equipment. Of that 97, only 38 actually work. And that was an admission by the German Defense Ministry, because the Parliament had inquired into this. Of all pieces of heavy equipment, medium to heavy equipment, possessed by the entire German military, 39% actually function. And they have no money to do anything about it. They came out with this cutting-edge Puma infantry fighting vehicle. You know, modernization of the armored car. It's not a tank, but it, from a distance, may be confused for one. And worse than that, Airbus, the military transport aircraft, are far worse off. These are major, again, private sector, European companies that are now have been exposed as frauds. This Puma was supposed to be the new generation of IFVs. But of the 71 of these that were delivered, and this is actually in 2017, 27 were combat ready. Two out of the seven Tiger Strike helicopters run. The transport, the big helicopter, the NH-90, four out of seven delivered that year actually functioned. They made a big deal about the Eurofighter Typhoon back in 2017, which, by the way, is also a BAE product and Airbus. Only one of them actually ended up being operational. The rest were sent back because the computers didn't work. And if that's not embarrassing enough, German submarines, which, by the way, used to be the strike terror in the Allied countries in World War I and World War II, their newest submarine, the newest type 212A, which is supposed to be, again, the next generation of submarine warfare, capable of navigating with no problem, submerged for 3 weeks without resurfacing, immediately hit a rock during the maneuver off the Norwegian coast. That was in October of 2017. That meant that the entire, not just some, the entire German submarine fleet was non-operational. Either they were being repaired, didn't run at all, or were damaged somehow. 2017, that November, the tank situation got worse. About half of it was non-operational. Of 244 of the Leopards that they had at the time, only 95 functioned. But all the rest either couldn't fire, didn't have the spare parts necessary for action, or had crews that were capable of running it. This is, of course, what, you know, Lithuania and Czechia are buying. But this is not isolated just to 2017. I mentioned the whole Puma issue, and that was happening not just back then, but last year. None of the Pumas work. And that comes straight from Berlin. Last year, Christine Lambrecht. Now, that doesn't sound like a defense minister to me, but she's never seen a battlefield before. And this all comes from, you know, Der Spiegel. In 2022, this obviously hasn't been fixed, because the internal documents of that, cited by Der Spiegel, in a trading exercise, they used 18 of these Pumas and zero were able to function. Electronics, everything else. There was a fire in one of the driver's compartments. And now Germany's in a position that it can't really contribute to NATO anymore, because all of its equipment, that which actually functioned, much of which that didn't, was sent to Ukraine. And that's not the end of it. There's an anonymous, you know, obviously anonymous Ukrainian major who said that what he thinks are light combat tanks supplied by France aren't suitable for attacks against Russians. Now, we're talking about the French AMX-10RC. Despite, again, you know, being touted as this extraordinary, it's not a light tank, they said it was. But pretty much anything can pierce the armor. Now, of course, Ukrainians are, you know, they like to blame the equipment for their endless list of failures, and that might be true, but I think it has to do with the operators as much as the equipment. So who's the defense minister of Ukraine? He's just a Jewish oligarch. Alexei Ryzhnikov, who is a lawyer and a businessman. Well, yeah, he was drafted in the early 80s and was a conscript in the Soviet military for a couple of years, but that's about it. He said that the French, really essentially it's an armored car, armored fighting vehicle, used as a tank, though, was, in his words, impractical. So what they're going to do, now that this, you know, counteroffensive has never really happened, they're going to try to blame the equipment. It is not a light tank, but it was sold to them as one. And as always, they're being phased out. One had its four-man crew die almost immediately. It can easily be pierced by Russian weaponry or any weaponry. This guy is a major, 34 years old. Spartanets is his call sign, so we don't know precisely who he is. And he said there was artillery shelling, and a shell exploded near the vehicle. It was a shrapnel that pierced the armor and the ammunition bay in the vehicle exploded. Well, the whole point of an armored fighting vehicle is to avoid things like shrapnel. But who runs these defense ministries? This, you know, I knew about this for a while. I haven't really talked about it. In France, for example, Sebastian Lecornu, zero military experience. Today, in Germany, Boris Pistorius, he had a very short stint as a conscript a million years ago, also has zero experience in military life. I mentioned his predecessor, Christine Lambrecht. The Dutch also have a woman, Kajsa Ongren, who has zero military experience. So does Belgium, Ludwig Deonder. Knows nothing about, she's extremely young, doesn't know anything about military, defense, or much of anything. Sweden has Pål Jonson, who has zero military experience, but at least he did a dissertation in the field of military science, which he did in Britain, by the way, but only really from the political side, like I do, not the actual functional side. Some of you who are my age might remember when Dukakis in the 1988 presidential race was filmed with his head sticking out of a tank as it was driving around. It was bobbing back and forth. It almost destroyed his campaign. And that's what all these people really are like. In fact, Ryzhnikov did that same kind of thing, driving around in the AMX 10RC, some of which was, you know, rushed to Kiev. He, of course, you know, he doesn't really know anything. He thinks that this was, he even said, this is going to liberate our territory, thanking Macron for this, and Lecornu. And because they receive these old pieces of equipment, this oligarch actually says, this is what liberty, equality, and brotherhood look like. Getting old pieces of military equipment for nothing. Well, nothing's ever free. A lot of dead Ukrainians are the price. But French tanks of any make, but especially these armored fighting vehicles that are being sold or sent as tanks, are completely ineffective. The armor is so thin that anything can penetrate it. I said at the beginning that it was a grenade that took down the Swedish version of this. But worse than that, if they're on a dirt road, the dirt or the mud clogs up the system. They have breakdowns everywhere, especially in the gearboxes. Then he said, of course, what I've been saying for a long time, maybe the month-long training in France isn't enough. Gee, who would have thought that? Maybe if you actually have military men, or someone who has some even basic knowledge of military science running the defense ministry, you wouldn't be having these problems. And of course, the French are replacing this with the EBRC Jaguar, so they're just dumping these old machines onto what's left of Ukraine. Now, the New York Times, which is a, you know, partisan leftist organization that really shouldn't be trusted, admitted that of the 113 Bradley fighting vehicles, again, sub-tanks, 17 have been knocked out upon arrival. Of course, it's far higher than that. The crews to operate them don't really exist. Those that exist are untrained, and there's no fuel there. In fact, the desperation has gotten so bad that the city of Miami has sent weapons taken from criminals over there. And this is just scratching the surface. But I want to bring up something. This isn't directly on topic, but it made me laugh, so I want to include it. This situation's a joke anyway. But some of you know what stolen valor is. I had a phase where I was into looking at this phenomenon, mostly from a psychological point of view. Stolen valor is when someone claims to have military experience that they don't. You know, common claims are being a SEAL, being wounded in combat, working in clandestine operations. Well, one guy that made RT laugh, and much of it made me laugh, it's a guy named James Vasquez. On Twitter, he had almost 500,000 followers, was claiming battlefield victories as a fighter in Ukraine, and was, you know, feted by the media everywhere, dramatic Twitter posts, thinking that he could profit from this. And I've spoken about this, maybe not in public, but the stolen valor matter is epidemic in this country since the Gulf War, or at the very latest, 9/11. And I mention this only because, of course, the media didn't question any of this. There's congressmen who didn't question any of this. And he was claiming all this battlefield achievement. And it was Business Insider, finally, that quoted other so-called volunteers in Ukraine, confirmed by the Pentagon, that the man made it all up. Stolen valor is a psychological issue. It's a way to get attention. It's a way to make you seem more of a man, strong, tough. And usually, I've spoken to a few of them. They don't know what's really going on, and so they stumble over their words. They say things that can't possibly be true. And as far as anyone knows, he was an electrician, an Army Reserve unit. But, you know, you can't pick up chicks with that kind of a story. But the very fact that that alone makes him a, quote, veteran is the bigger issue. When I was growing up, a veteran was somebody who was in combat, not just someone who served in a branch of the military while a war was going on somewhere. That, just like, you know, I have a whole article on the Bronze Star, how it's been demoted, everyone gets one almost. But it just shows you how gullible Americans are. He bragged about capturing Russians, taking out tanks, always interviewed, no one questioned him, made all these catchy claims. It was Adam Kittinger, a congressman, who insisted that he be verified, having the check mark, whatever you call it, because so many people were pretending to be him. And he says, he's legit. We have to make sure we know who we're talking to. I think this phenomenon, and you're seeing it everywhere, there's a guy who spends most of his spare time outing fake SEALs. SEAL claims are so constant and almost always false. Many of you might know Don Shipley, who does this from Virginia. It's funny. Because he calls these people up and asks them questions, and they don't know what they're talking about, and it's almost, it's pathetic, sad, and funny at the same time. Now, he would go to a place where a battle had taken place. I mean, he actually physically was over there, as far as anyone knows. But then he would shoot videos in front of destroyed equipment and claiming all of this is a tank I took out, whatever. And it occurred to me, as I'm reading about this guy, well, this is how the embedded media write stories every day. He's doing what CNN does constantly, but I guess isn't powerful enough to make it stick. One post, he said he was heading to Soledad, and he said, yeah, there's intense fighting there. I'm going to be leaving soon. But unfortunately for him, Ukrainian forces had withdrawn days earlier, and no one noticed the discrepancy. And of his 400,000 followers, at least no one said anything in public. And finally, it was Ukraine's Territorial Defense Forces. Sarah Ashton, who is not a Ukrainian name as far as I know, an American who works in the media department over there, and they have a big media department, and said, you know, how is it that no one noticed that he couldn't have legally gone on combat missions because he didn't have a contract with the Ukrainian forces? You just can't go wandering over there. And it's possible he wasn't there at all. He simply was good at Photoshop. But this is the level that Americans, especially journalists, function at. That's the joke. I don't know. We're worried about this guy. It's the millions of people who bought his story without question. And it really wasn't until he said he's going to be a multimillionaire somehow because of his combat experience over there that he was ever caught. You had elites from media talking to him, interviewing him, and no one asking even basic questions. As far as the media is concerned, it doesn't matter. They love to show a non-white American being a hero over there, despite his claims being ridiculous and, in fact, impossible. I tend to doubt he was there at all. But if he was, he was there as an electrician, which isn't honorable enough for him. And that's just an exposure, a particularly humorous exposure of what the American media really are. And what you know, many average Americans really are. The stolen valor thing is, there was a law banning that, and then it was deemed unconstitutional, so they rewrote it. It's such a common thing. I think most of us have come across people who have claimed military experience, and their story falls apart when you ask the simplest question. I've had people close to me, in fact, claiming to be in Vietnam. I ask one question, and they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But this is representative of this society. It's representative of the media not asking even basic questions. That somehow being a part of these imperial wars is their ticket to manhood. The SEALs are ridiculous. They have tattoos. They have medals up that they never earned. You could buy them, you know, on eBay. Don Shipley calls them up and says, "What was your BUDS class?" And, of course, they don't even know what BUDS is, let alone a class number. Many of these people have jobs. They run self-defense courses, shooting courses, all claiming to be SEALs, a big SEAL tattoo on their back or something like that. It's extremely common. Just SEALs alone, Delta Force or the Green Berets or the 1st Marine Division, it's everywhere. Sort of like people pretending to be a PhD when they're ignorant. Gets me angry because of how much I went through to get that in that circumstance, and people claiming it or taking an honorary degree and claiming that it's real makes the blood boil. That also is extremely common. This comes from media manipulation. It comes from saturation coverage, these make-believe stories. And coming at the end of a talk on the failures of all this equipment, the manpower. You know, I have papers on the falsified casualty figures of the Gulf War in the U.S., from Somalia, failures of the SEALs, and all this, all the way up. And it's funny to end on something like this, because this is just a function of brainwashing and pretty substantial psychological problems. And he just assumed that Johnson's Law is true. He just figured there's not enough people to know anything to question me or even know what questions to ask. And he got away with it for a very long time. He was a phenomenon on Twitter. And only when the money came in, only when the American working for the media department in Kiev finally saw something on Twitter and spoke out. Of course, she claimed to have known it since last summer but didn't bother to say anything, so she's full of it. But congressmen and everyone else talking about this brave guy. I, at this point, my father used to say, who actually was a very badly wounded combat veteran in the 1st Marine Division in Korea, he said, "You know how you could spot a phony? You could spot a phony by them talking about their combat experience, how many people they killed. Right away, you know it's not real." Take a lot of these claims with a grain of salt, and especially claims that the U.S. has this formidable military force that no one can defeat. All right, everyone. Thank you. I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.